This is a University of Otago podcast.
Good evening. My name is Harlene Hain, and I am the Vice Chancellor here at the University of Otago. And it is with great pleasure that I am the first person to welcome you to this inaugural professorial lecture. It's fantastic to see so many people here from all four divisions of the university and also members of the general public. I think these inaugural professorial lectures provide an outstanding example of the town-gown relationship between the university and the city of Dunedin. And it is clear that Professor Broughton's reputation precedes him and because so many of you have come to join us in celebrating in his academic rise to professor at this university. The reason that I'm particularly pleased to be here this evening is that, in my view, we have the opportunity this evening to actually hear from a true Renaissance man. As many of you know, Professor Broughton is a member of the Faculty of Dentistry, and I suspect that Professor Seymour will have something to say about his work in that particular area. But you might also know that Professor Broughton's interests are very far and wide. He is a published playwright and a published poet. He has written a libretto for a musical. He spent time, served time perhaps, on the University of Otago Council for many years, very ably representing the views of Ngāi Tahu. He has also been one of the driving forces for one of the newest initiatives here at the University of Otago, which is our now two-year-old annual Anzac Day service. And certainly both his motivation and his contribution to that service are very well recognized. But I think perhaps many of you in this audience will know Professor Broughton best for his Māori welcome that he religiously provides for us at every graduation ceremony that begins those fine events in such a fantastic cultural way. So in so many areas, he has made an important contribution to the University of Otago. His rise to professorship, like all of the others from within side, was very hard earned, and it is a pleasure to be here with him and with you this evening to celebrate his fantastic success. I will now hand over the microphone to Professor Greg Seymour, who will tell us a little bit more about John's academic background.
Thank you. Kia ora. Vice-Chancellor, tēnā koe. Professor Broughton, tēnā koe. Tēnā koutou katoa. This evening, we will be taken on a journey. It's a personal journey. It's John's personal journey, but a journey nevertheless. It's a journey of development, a journey of learning, and a journey of a commitment of an idea of service to the university and service to the community. The Vice-Chancellor referred to John as a true Renaissance man, and in this context, I always remember the line from the movie Chariots of Fire when Harold Abrams was paraded in front of the Dons at Cambridge, and he said, "I run for my king, I run for my country, and I run for my university." And I think that sums up John in many respects. He works for the community, but he also works very much for his university. John's journey of development began in the early 1970s when he came to the University of Otago as an undergraduate student in dentistry. He had previously undertaken a science degree at Massey University, but we will forgive him for that. He graduated from dentistry in 1977, and after 10 years of general practice here in Dunedin, he came back to the university as a lecturer under a new blood scheme and started on the 1st of May 1989 as a lecturer. And this also saw the beginning of his journey of learning and of postgraduate study. Subsequently, he was awarded a diploma for graduates in 1995, and then a postgraduate diploma in community dentistry, which was awarded with distinction in 2006. He initially enrolled in a master's degree, and in order to develop the idea of a commitment to the improvement of Maori health and Maori oral health in particular. But his master's degree was converted into a PhD very quickly on the recognition of the quality of the work that he was doing. He was subsequently awarded PhD in 2006. John then continued his journey of learning, and now a journey of discovery. And together with others, he obtained a major HRC grant to apply the Kaupapamari framework that he had developed during his PhD to develop that further within a broader community setting. Returning to his journey of development, John went through virtually every rank for an academic at the University of Otago. He started out as a lecturer. He was then promoted to senior lecturer, to associate professor, and now he is a full professor, and this is what we are celebrating this evening. And it's always gratifying for any university to see its own graduates achieve the highest possible level academically. And this is what we see this evening with John. He has achieved the ultimate academically, and we're now celebrating this with him this evening. As a teacher, John has been recognised internationally and was awarded the Leaders in Indigenous Medical Education Award for Outstanding Leadership by an Individual. This was awarded to him in 2007. John's journey of service to the university and the community is just as impressive as his academic journey. He was responsible for the development of the Whakawātea, or clearing of the way for anatomy dissections. He developed the Te Whare Kaitiaki, the Faculty of Dentistry's clinic for Maori people and their whānau. And more recently, and I would like to offer my personal thanks to John for his support in the development of the final year dental student outplacement program with Maori oral health providers. This is now, in my view, one of the flagship programs within the Faculty of Dentistry, and I would suggest also, Vice-Chancellor, one of the flagship programs of the university. Over the years, John has been a member of the University Council, as the Vice-Chancellor has told us. He was also on the Capital Development Committee, and he is, and has been, and still is, on the Treaty of Waitangi Committee, and numerous other committees that I just haven't got the time. I was limited to a few minutes, and if I went into all of those, I would go over my time drastically. But John's journey outside the university also exemplifies his commitment to the community. He's had exhibits at the Otago Museum and was involved with the redevelopment of the Otago Settlers Museum, or Toitū. I was pleasantly surprised. About 2 weeks ago, my wife and I decided to visit Toitū, and there, out of the blue, I heard John's voice, and I went over and I saw that he was on a video talking about the old whaling boat, the Maori Girl, and this is on display in the museum. And I was totally surprised and very impressed with John's knowledge and development in this area. As the Vice-Chancellor mentioned, John is an accomplished playwright and poet, and it's with great pleasure, and indeed I consider it to be an honour, for me to introduce Professor Broughton and ask him to take you on this exciting journey. Thank you.
Haere ki tō mātua I te rangi. Te unga ora, tēnā koutou. E te Timuaki Vice-Chancellor, Professor Haines, tēnā koe, e te manukura o te Kaupapu Niho, Dean of the Faculty of Dentistry, Professor Seymour, tēnā koe, ngā ahorangi, Professors Squire, Professor Blakey, Professor Connor, tēnā koutou, Dr. Adams, tēnā koe. Ngā hoa my colleagues, tēnā koutou katoa. Te whānau whānui, taku whanauka, no Ngāi Tahu, no Kati, Ngāti Kahunguni ki Hiratonga, tēnā koutou, e hoa mā, ngā iwi ngā, ngā haue whā, ngā waka o te motu, tēnā koutou, kia ora tātou katoa. Well, my moment in the spotlight as a very proud member of the academic staff of Te Whare Wānanga o Otago, and it's appropriate to me to begin with whakapapa. So, I te taha o tōku papa on my father's side, ko Kahurangi Te Maunga, ko Ngāru Roro Te Awa, ko Taki Te Mutuwaka, ko Ngāti Kahunguni ki Heretonga Te Iwi, ko Ngāti Tō Harapaki, ko Ngāti Upoko Uiri Ngā Hapū, ko Koho Pātiki, ko O Mahu. I te tā o tōku mama, ko Hikararo Te Mahoka, ko Wakawaiti Te Awa, ko Huruhuru Mano, ko Uruwaro, ko Taki Timo, ko Araturi Ngā Waka, ko Ngāi Tahu Te Iwi, ko Kai Te Ruhikihiki, ko Kati Hauia, ko Kati Hurapa, ki Pukatake Ngā Hapu, ko Pukatake ko Otago Ngā Marae. And ko Araturi Te Waka, ko Araturi Te Tai, ko Araturi Te Rohe, ko ngā iwi ngā haue whā te iwi, ko Araturi te whānau whānau, ko Araturi te marae. On my father's side, I'm a descendant of Rena Te Kawapō from Omahu, who was a very influential figure throughout the 1800s. On my mother's side, I'm a descendant of the Honourable Tāmi Paraita MP for Southern Māori and Petty Whirini. And I'm also a descendant of John Lovell, who came to Dunedin with his wife and four children in 1853 from Kent in England. He did return to England, but came back to Dunedin in 1864 with 53 packing cases of furnishings. And today, I'm fortunate to live amongst the contents of those 53 packing cases of furnishings. My late father was a Otago medical graduate, and he went through Otago with five other Māori medical and dental students in the late 1930s. And it was during my parents' wedding reception, he received a telephone call asking for Dr. Broughton. And his friend and fellow classmate, Dr. Henry Bennett, had called to say that he had passed all his finals examinations and they were now doctors. And that's Henry there with father there. So, and father returned to his home base and spent his entire working life at the Fallen Soldiers Memorial Hospital in Hastings, now called Hawke's Bay Hospital. So that is my whakapapa. And so that's me on my christening. And wearing the family gown, which is goes back to the 1860s, and that's my young grandniece who wears that when for her christening last year. And so that's Margot, and she's here tonight. And when we donated some of our grandmother's treasured tom to the Otago Museum, and it's a portrait of father in front of his beloved hospital. Okay. And so that's my whakapapa, and I have had a rather interesting and privileged journey through Te Whare Wānanga o Otago, hence my title, Professor in the Whare. And I wish to, therefore, thought I'd present some of my Otago experiences in this hikoi in teaching, research, and some community service, and perhaps some theatricalities. First of all, though, how was it that I came to join the university staff? Because it was not something that I actually had planned. After graduating with a BDS in the class of 1977, I was very fortunate to be appointed dental house surgeon at the dental school. And this was a very formative year for me, and I have to acknowledge two very important people who really shaped my initial career in dentistry, and that was the late Professor Sandy McAllister and Dr. John Edwards. The following year, I went into dental practice at the Gardens and established a new practice there. And one person who was a patient of mine at the Gardens Dental Surgery was Professor David Skeeg. And it was Professor Skeeg who established the position of lecturer in Māori Health within the Department of Preventive and Social Medicine, and he asked me to apply. But there's a bit more to the story than that. How is it that Professor Skegg came to be attend my dental practice? Well, it was like this. Late one Saturday evening when I was a dental house surgeon in on call, I was required at A&E to attend to two young men who were involved in a motor vehicle crash in Kaikalai Valley Road. Apparently, their car hit a lamppost and they had both suffered facial injuries. The first patient had a fractured mandible and I had to have him admitted in order to have surgery under a general anaesthetic the following morning to reduce and fix the fracture. The second patient had deep lacerations to his lower lip through to the bone, which required debridement and suturing. So I called Professor McAllister at midnight for him to do this, assisted by myself. And this deep suturing took some time. And afterwards, Professor McAllister was having a cup of tea while I remained with the patient. And I said to the patient, "Do you always talk like that?" He said, "No," as he spoke in a very husky voice. So I called Professor McAllister to have a look at the patient, and we agreed that something here was not quite right. We then had the patient admitted overnight, and that was at 1 a.m. At 3 a.m, the patient was seen by the admitting house surgeon. At 5 a.m, he was seen by the respiratory house surgeon and was transferred to Wakari Hospital. At 7 a.m, he was in theatre having a ruptured trachea repaired. Now, if we had sent the patient home, he would have gone to bed, gone to sleep, and never woken up again, having suffered from a surgical emphysema. The next morning on our ward round, Professor McAllister said to me, "Thank you, you have just saved me from an appearance at the coroner's court." And from that moment, Professor McAllister and I had a very congenial working relationship, such that when I went into dental practice, it was Professor McAllister who referred many patients to me, including Professor Skegg. Now, if we go back to that original traffic accident, I later learned that the motor vehicle had hit the lamppost on Kaikoura Valley Road as it had skidded on some oil that had been spilt on the road. So for me to have become an academic as a staff member at the University of Otago, it was all because of whoever it was who had spilt the oil on the road, which caused the unfortunate accident, which caused the facial injuries to those two unfortunate victims, which resulted in the young man surviving the internal injuries, which led to Professor McAllister thinking I was all right, and he referred Professor Ski to me as a dental patient, and the rest is like, was history. In the late 1980s, there was a Faculty of Medicine working party on Māori perspectives in the training of medical students in Dunedin, convened by Professor Olive Simpson. The recommendations of that working party was that a lectureship in Māori health should be established at the Dunedin School of Medicine, and I applied for a job and took up the position in May 1989. In coming into this job, there were two quite significant things for me to deal with during my first year. The first was the dissection room in the Department of Anatomy and Structural Biology. Some Māori medical students at the time came to see me as they were very concerned about having to work in the dissection room without any form of tikanga or customary processes that would allow them to work there without anything untoward. Two students mentioned that they refused to go in there at all and studied all their anatomy in the museum instead. So with the full support of Professor Chris Heath and the late Mrs. Elva Kappa, we organised a whakawaitia, or clearing the way process, led by our local kaumātua, Mr. Kalika Roberts. Unfortunately, it wasn't as easy as that, as there were some people who had appeared to be quite opposed to such a cultural practice taking place. It was seen to me as a service for the deceased who had no say in their willingness to participate or not. So with the support of both the Dean of the Faculty of Medicine, Professor A. John Campbell, and Professor Chris Heath, a considerable dialogue ensued, such that the whakawaitia took place. That first occasion, there was just a small group of Māori medical students, Mr. Roberts and myself. The occasion is forever etched in my mind. The day was a clear, sunny day with not a cloud in the sky. However, as soon as Mr. Roberts began his karakia, there was a sudden downpour of rain, so loud on the roof that his voice was totally drowned out. The moment that the whakatea was complete, the rain stopped and the sun came out. And that was taken as a very good sign. The following year, the whakawaitia was repeated and with Mr. Roberts, and the Māori students were joined by a handful of their fellow friends students who had heard about the occasion and wished to participate. Then the following year, the whakawaitia was opened up for all students who wished to participate, and it was quite enlightening to see that practically the whole class voluntarily turned up. Now the whakawaitia is just an all-part function of the Division of Health Sciences for all students. The feedback from the students from those first few years was very encouraging, as a number of students expressed the same sentiments. It was some te ao Māori, the Māori world, that gave them that enriching experience to remove any untoward concerns that they may have harboured. The second issue that came up in my first year was a submission by the Otago Medical School to the Parliamentary Select Committee considering the Health Research Council Bill. The draft submission that was put to a meeting of the Otago Medical School for discussion on the 15th of May 1990 included the following. Standing committees. We oppose the provision of the bill to set up a separate standing committee for Māori health, as it creates an artificial and culturally insensitive division of Māori health research from other health research, to the disadvantage of both. We believe that the need for a special attention to be given to health problems of Māori and other cultural groups can be better served by a subcommittee of the Public Health Standing Committee. Recommendation that subsection such section be deleted, that and that the subsection 1 be extended to read, the committee shall have a subcommittee to advise on Māori health research needs. So I duly went along to the meeting of the Otago Medical School Assembly and I proposed the motion that section 14 of the submission be deleted. Happy to say that the motion was passed and this clause was then deleted from the faculty's and university's submission to the select committee. When the Health Research Council was established, there was a separate standing committee for Māori health research led by the late Professor Eru Pōmuri. My teaching role in the first instance was to develop Hauora Māori, Māori health in the undergraduate curriculum at the Dunedin School of Medicine. It was not a role that I was completely comfortable with, as I was a dentist in a medical school. However, I took some comfort from the fact that at the time there were two fellow dentists with the same Hauora Māori role at the Auckland Medical School, Hunada Carr and Bob McKeag. There were three things that gave me the wherewithal I felt to do the job. First of all was the support, not only from the local Māori community, which was immense, but also from Māori leaders within the health profession. The late Dr. Paratini Ngata, the late Professor Eru Pōmuri, Dr. Ira Hana Ryan, Professor Sir Mason Jury, Dr. Paparangi Reid, and Dr. Tony Duketi, and other leaders in the Māori health field, such as Mr. Wayne McLean of Raukura Hauora o Tainui, and Mr. Rob Cooper of Ngāti Hine. I would also like to acknowledge the local Māori people who came to support with positive examples for the students, who acted as guest lecturers and as a listening post for myself. So we had people like Wendy Samuels, Chris Maxwell, Auntie Bella, Connie Hassan, and Chris Rimini, all women. The second aspect was Te Whare Tapawha, which was the model of Māori health and wellbeing, which provided the framework for Hauora Māori in the preclinical years. And the third thing was the many guest lecturers who were very happy to support the teaching of Hauora Māori, who shared their time and expertise with the students. And then there were my little lecture theatre strategies that I had to develop. First of all, I would play Māori music videos as the students entered the lecture theatre, and I turned the lights down. And this was my way of saying, well, now this is my space. For the next 50 minutes, this is Te Ao Māori, the Māori world. And then I would make use of the three overhead projectors and have slides like that looking right down on the students. Okay. In fourth and fifth year, I had to make seminars on aspects of Hauora Māori in psychological medicine, paediatrics and public health. And I'd like to acknowledge the support of these sessions from Dr. Kieran Skegg and Professor Barry Taylor, and also all the staff in preventive and social medicines. And over these years, we developed the Māori health learning objectives with the Dunedin School of Medicine staff and my Hauora Māori colleagues at the Wellington and the Christchurch Schools of Medicine. So these were knowledge objectives, and there was these things here, and also with the schools objectives. And there were some rather interesting outcomes for some students, and one story I will relate is the story of one fifth year medical student who came to see me one day to say, I've come to apologise. The way that I behaved towards you in third year was not appropriate. He then went on to say, I'm from a very close family, and my best friend and first cousin was severely injured in a motor vehicle accident. He was in intensive care. Our family was there and kept vigil for several days before he passed away. Then he said, I could only cope with this tragedy and manage the grief of my family by applying what you talked about in Te Whare Tapa Whā, the Māori perspective of whānau, tīnana, hinengaro and wairua, and especially Te Taha Wairua. And he said, I want to thank you for that. Now I really understand what Hauora Māori is all about. And what I guess for that student, particular student, was a defining moment. And then there's another story I wish to relate. Following one Australian accreditation reviews for the medical school, I was heavily criticised as there was no Māori perspectives in obstetrics and gynaecology in the undergraduate course. Well, being a mere male, I didn't consider it appropriate for me to be in that domain. However, we got out in the community, and one afternoon, there was a knock on my door. Two fire Māori women walked in. They said, well, we have heard about what has gone about this matter, and here's what we're going to do. You sit there in that corner, we will sit here in this corner. And we will have a conversation with each other about our own experiences of having our babies. Now, you can listen in, and you can write down what we say. So I did that, what I was told, and it captured their korero, and put it together in a 16-page photocopied booklet as a resource for their medical students. The result was a captivating document that suddenly ended up out and about amongst the community, far beyond the seminar rooms of the medical school. One of those women who was at a health hui in Muruhiku in Invercargill, and somehow the people there had acquired copies of this document and were exceptional in their praise of it. They then realised that this photocopied document had to be developed into a proper publication. So they did that and went out and gathered many more stories. And the result was Ukaipō, Māori Woman and Childbirth, which was the collective stories of four generations of Māori women. The publication was very well received throughout the country and had two subsequent reprints and has become a classic text for nursing and midwifery. And so I'd like to pay tribute also to my two colleagues and dear friends, Christine Rimini and Connie Hassan. And for the medical school teaching, I was very happy to hand over the reins to Dr. Joanne Baxter. I always felt it was a great coup to have secured Jo and the academic staff of the medical school, and she's gone on to develop many wonderful things with her team. I was also asked to provide Māori health in the undergraduate courses in dentistry, pharmacy and physiotherapy. So it became a bit like, oh, it's Thursday, it must be Belgium. Now I'm happy to say that by 2000, the other disciplines have their own Māori staff members to deliver the teaching. Now I just stick to my knitting in dental school. So let's go on to the Faculty of Dentistry. And there's some aspects of the teaching in dental school that I wish to mention and to acknowledge my friends and colleagues who are here this evening. The first is the Mihi Whakatau for all new students entering the Faculty of Dentistry on their very first day. This is an important innovation at the Faculty of Dentistry, which has occurred under the leadership of the Dean, Professor Seymour. And it's a very impressive occasion conducted under Ngāi Tahu Tikanga. And it's a very large gathering that we have to have it in the town hall, in fact. The other aspect was the establishment of Te Whare Kaitiaki, a dental clinic for Māori and their whānau. When I first took up this role in the university, a number of Māori people from the local community said to me, well, we would like a place in the dental school that we can feel really comfortable with. You are there, do something about it. So after some negotiation, we were able to establish Te Whare Kaitiaki, a Māori-focused dental clinic that gave whānau a choice. And I'd like to acknowledge Professor Martin Ferguson for his commitment and leadership in supporting such a venture and to make a clinical services available, and also to Ethne McFadden for her never-ending support, advice and guidance. The clinic was to be a teaching clinic with two final year dental students assigned to the clinic each week. At the time, Te Kura Kaupapa Māori or Otiputi was established a few minutes away, and they chose to have their dental care in our clinic. And what happened was quite interesting. The older children, we put them into gowns, gloves and masks, and we talk about 11 and 12-year-olds, and acted as dental assistants to the other younger children, the 5 and 6-year-olds. And these young pupils, they were very smart, and they picked up things very quickly, picked things up literally. I was amazed one day when one 11-year-old girl said to the student who was placing restoration, oh, you need a 179 plastic filling instrument, and here it is. And she was quite right. At the end of the appointment, the children went home with oral health packs and toothbrushes and toothpaste. And at the end of the year, I could report to the Kura principal that the tamariki were all dentally fit. What we were able to achieve with the tamariki from this Kura was that we were able to get some 90% of the children through to their full secondary dentition without a filling in their mouth. And when I saw those adolescents, when they were 16 or 17, it was the same. They were totally caries-free. An important but unsung aspect of this was the staff and the whānau tautoko at the Kura, who went out of their way to reinforce the positive messages of good oral health and promote healthy diets, so it was backed up in the school and in the home. Another important factor was the Colgate Bright Smiles Futures Program. And that was a program that was developed in the United States, initially for middle-class Americans. And they had colouring in templates. And when they introduced it here in New Zealand, we said, well, you have to translate them into te reo. So they did that, Colgate, but they said not only that, you had to redraw the images as well to make them appropriate. And Colgate, in actual fact, were very good in doing that. And so what we did is that we made these colouring in books for the children. But a colouring in book was no good without coloured pencils. So at the time, the warehouse had a special on packs of coloured pencils for 99 cents a pack. So I went and I purchased this entire stock. But the real thing about this was to see the children have what I call a defining moment. And for that young girl who acted as a chairside assistant and was providing real advice to dental student, I believe for her this was a defining moment. And that was, hey, I'm here, I'm in control here, I can do this, and I can do it well. So over the years, I have witnessed many such defining moments. And that is why we had such good oral health outcomes for those particular children. And I'd also like to acknowledge the oral staff and oral surgery, Ethne McFadgen, and also Professor Bernadette Drummond. On many occasions, on some occasions, we had to refer a child through for a general anaesthetic, and the child and their whānau never had to make more than 2 or 3 days for that. And in the whole scheme of things, that was quite amazing, really. And now the dental care of the tamariki from the Kura was subsequently transferred to the newly established Bachelor of Oral Health course, where they continued to have regular access to quality care. And of course, one little recent aspect about all this was a couple of weeks ago, the MP for Te Taitonga, Mr. Tino Ureno Tinakatani, had released a press statement about the fact that what we've had in our whānau clinic in the school is that for the last 2.5 years we have had van loads of whānau coming, driving all the way from Invercargill to receive dental care. Okay. Next wonderful thing is tipu ora. Now, tipu ora, and this is goes on to our teaching of our community placement for our finally our dental students throughout the country. Tipu ora is a mother and child wellness program that was established in the 1980s by Mrs. Ines Kingi, supported by her husband, Pihopa Kingi. And they had established a marae-based dental service to cater for their tipu ora babies. And then from a decade from 2000, we began a volunteer community engagement in which the dental students volunteered to give a week of their mid-year break, pay their own travel costs to Rotorua, and spend a week providing free dental care for tipu ora at the Tino Hopo Health Centre in the Rotorua. The dental students provided free dental care, and they did examination treatment plans, scaling, cleaning, prophylaxis, restorations, oral surgery, referrals, and they did oral health promotion. And they ran the whole thing themselves. They did the administration, patient records, appointments. They meet and greet the patients. And I was just so impressed because they were so professional and so serious about the work. They were just amazingly wonderful. And over that period, we did a student evaluation of that community volunteer. And the key question was, what did you gain most from this clinical placement? And over the that 10-year period, there were 81 responses we received, and what came through very clearly were the themes of the whole experience, the clinical experience, the cultural experience, and the confidence gained. And the whole experience is what they said. I have more understanding of Māori health. You can read about things in a textbook. You can read books and reports on Māori health, but this was real-life experience. the whole experience. Often the patient presented with other family members. Mum was there in the chair while the grandmother came as well to look after the children. Sometimes there were kids everywhere and it was no bother at all. Clinical experience, it was the ability to work faster and having a real-life clinical experience of seeing patients all day, making a diagnosis and carrying out priority treatment. Cultural experience, I gained a wider perspective of the Māori community and appreciation of their beliefs and values. And the confidence gained, the one thing that I gained out of it was the confidence. The confidence in myself to engage with patients, to make clinical decisions and to know that I did all the right things well. And one student said, this was the best week of my whole dental school training. So the outcome, of course, was that a memorandum of agreement was signed between Te Pō Ora and the Charitable Trust and the University of Otago. And from there, success resulted in its expansion in 2010 to 6 Māori providers hosting 35 students. And then from 2011, all students now engage in a similar program with Māori Oath providers for 5 weeks in semester time as an integral part of their undergraduate training. So we went from, in 2000, a student volunteer community service with community-based oral health program, which was 1 week in vacation time, to 2012, that's the student clinical placement with Māori Oath providers, 5 weeks in semester time, integral part of their compulsory training, of their undergraduate training, and it's now compulsory for all students. And so these are the Māori Oral Health providers throughout the country who have embraced this program: Te Pō Ora in Rotorua, Te Manu Toro in Tauranga, Ngāti Hene in Kawakawa, Ora Toa in Porirua and Ashburton, Oranga Niho o Ki Tamaraki in New Plymouth, Te Tai Whenua o Heretanga in Hastings, and Raukura Hauora in Tainui. That's great. And also as a result of that, we've had memorandums of agreement or signed with all the providers. And the university, of course, have travelled to those particular locations. And this was with Ngāti Hene Health in the University of Otago, it was Waitangi, with Te Tai Whenua Heretanga in Hastings, with Te Manu Toro in Tauranga, and with Waikato Tainui, and of course they did this at the iwi level, not at the provider level, and so that was a significant occasion. And with Te Pō Ora, the Charitable Trust there, and with Ngāti Toa Rangatira, Wellington. So what we've seen, of course, then, we have this relationship between the University of Otago and Māori Oral Health providers, and the establishment of these formal relationships which are based on the Treaty of Waitangi, both the articles and the principles. Quite significant for the university. And also the providers have been very good in the facilities that they have provided for our students to use. Another aspect of the Faculty of Dentistry is that with the university's Māori strategic framework, in fact, the faculty developed their own Māori strategic framework based on the university's framework, and this was officially adopted by the faculty at Huirapamurai, Pukitareke, and again, have to acknowledge the Dean, Professor Seymour, for his leadership with this important aspect of the university's work. Okay. Now, my third little thing which I just think to discuss this evening is the research, or in particular kaupapa Māori research, and rangahau hauora Māori. The first project that I engaged in was a small project about Māori women smoking. I obtained an HRC Māori Health summer studentship for a third year medical student, Mark Lawrence, now Dr. Mark Lawrence, consultant psychiatrist in Tauranga. And this way, a qualitative survey of 600 Māori women, smokers, ex-smokers and non-smokers undertaken in Otago and Auckland. And as for two blokes engaged in this mahi, was possible because of the overwhelming support of women themselves. In Auckland, we were invited to have a short interview at 8 p.m. on a Radio Aotearoa radio station organised for us by Mrs. Pauline Kingi, who was at the time the Auckland Regional Director for TPK. Well, our 10-minute interview extended to 4 hours, as so many people wanted to ring and telephone in and speak to us. And from this live radio session, we attained some quite some memorable qualitative data, and this is one of my favourite quotes that came through: smoking is my best friend, my friend is killing me. The results were written up and published in a book with a cover specially painted for us by New Zealand's renowned artist Robin Kahukiwa. What I believe was significant about this particular publication was that it set the benchmark, the style and tone for our subsequent research publications, the main aim of which was to disseminate back to Māori communities in a way that was acceptable and appropriate. Rather than focus upon negative statistics and a deficit model, we focused upon the kōrero, the stories of the people. I knew that this publication had served its purpose in this regard, as I was constantly requested by the public libraries from around the country for more copies as they kept on being pinched off the shelves. In the 1990s, in negotiation with the then Ngāi Tahu Development Corporation in the immediate post-treaty settlement phase, we established the Ngāi Tahu Māori Health Research Unit within the Department of Preventive and Social Medicine. This was initially funded for several years by Ngāi Tahu, and I must acknowledge the support of Professor David Skegg as HOD of Preventive and Social Medicine at the time, and Professor Graham Mortimer, Dean of the Faculty, Dean of the School of Medicine, and then Professor Bill Gillespie in their support for this venture, and also Tata Mio Regan of Te Nunaka o Ngāi Tahu. What we did was to engage in a number of research activities that was part of the Ngāi Tahu strategic plan, and we produced a number of publications that were directly targeted for whānau. And these are them, and they were all in the same vein, style and tone as the original Māori Woman Smoking publication. Working with Professor John Langley of the Injury Prevention Research Unit, we published a document, Ngā Tātauranga, which was a compilation of the then current statistics for Māori and injury. The document consisted of just numbers and tables and pie charts. This document was targeted at government agencies, ACC and the health sector. From that, two papers were published in the New Zealand Medical Journal, but we still had to produce another publication, again targeted at whānau, in a manner that was meaningful and appropriate. As it wasn't a very good idea to undertake a qualitative project with whānau on their tragic experiences of mortality or incapacity through some form of injury, I thought, why not use stories from Māori writers? Witi Ihamaira had just completed and published the 6-volume anthology of contemporary Māori writing, which included many appropriate stories. So I telephoned Witi and asked him about using some of those stories. And he was very supportive and told me what I already knew, of course, that I would have to contact each individual writer, seek their permission, and pay them a royalty. That was fine. When I spoke to the sponsor, ACC, I said that to do that, it would take me at least 6 months. Well, I'm sorry to say, you haven't got 6 months, you've just got 6 days. So I thought, goodness, what am I going to do? So I did what I had to do. I just made it all up. Injury to Māori, does it really have to be like this? This so-called qualitative aspect was total 100% John Broughton fiction. It was a matter of combining science and art. The science was statistical reporting while the art was contemporary Māori literature. And the publication worked. Injury to Māori, does it really have to be like this, was launched in the banquet hall of Parliament by three ministers of the Crown: the Minister for Māori Affairs, the Associate Minister for ACC, and the Associate Minister for Health. The publication went through a couple of reprints and has been used extensively throughout the country. The other aspect of my kaupapa Māori research journey that I wish to present is this. Oranga Niho, a review of Māori oral health services utilising a kaupapa Māori methodology. I managed to get to be an associate professor with just a humble BDS degree. So the time came, it was critical to acquire some postgraduate qualifications. I enrolled at the Faculty of Dentistry to undertake the postgraduate diploma in community dentistry, followed by the master's. For my thesis, I knew exactly what I wanted to do: to undertake a review of Māori oral health services which had developed throughout the country over the previous decade, but wanting to do this by applying a kaupapa Māori approach. Kaupapa Māori research has been evolving, developing and finding acceptance within the mainstream scientific world through the 1980s and 1990s. And the difference can be illustrated like this. Here we are, both travelling in the same direction, a waka and a rowing eight, but we're looking different ways. So Kaupapa Māori methodology is to undertake a project looking through Māori eyes, upholding tikanga Māori, applying a Kaupapa Māori analysis, resulting in maitauranga Māori or Māori knowledge with beneficial outcomes for Māori people. So in doing that, I needed to have a Kaupapa Māori research framework. So I developed one. And this was it. After considerable background research and literature reviews, going to hui, looking at approaches that my Māori colleagues were undertaking, I developed a Kaupapa Māori research framework for my study. And the Kaupapa Māori research consisted of these seven principles. And these are they. Rangatiratanga, or Māori leadership, was the Treaty of Waitangi approach which recognises Māori self-determination. Second one was whakakotahitanga, or unity. That was the recognition of what being Māori means by embracing universal aspects of Māori culture and belief systems. Whakapapa, or lineage, was the recognition of the past where Māori have come from and have been and are going. Of course, this affords a historical approach. And there was whakawhanuitanga, or diversity, the recognition and celebration of differences within the Māori world. Whanaungatanga, or relationships, the recognition of the many branches and associations, interactions and relations within and without the Māori world. Māramatanga, or enlightenment, which is the increase in knowledge and the application of that knowledge for a beneficial outcome. And the last one was whakapākehi, to strengthen. That was to the recognition of the need for Māori institutions to continually grow and develop for the benefit of all. So that was the framework that I developed, I justified and I applied, and it worked a treat. Anyway, when I duly submitted the completed thesis for the Masters, the examiners rejected it and recommended that I get the higher degree instead. So it was resubmitted unchained to be examined under PhD regulations. So now I have this korowai whero. In recent years, I've been a student supervisor for the theatre studies paper, Theatre 353 Bicultural Theatre, in which the students are required to undertake a theatre exercise which demonstrates New Zealand biculturalism. Well, that year, I had the students utilise and apply my Kaupapa Māori research framework for their project on bicultural theatre in New Zealand. And again, it worked a treat, and they received an A-plus from the examiners. So I'd also like to acknowledge Associate Professor Lisa Warrington and Senator Hilary Helber for them. So tēnā kōrua. The other Kaupapa Māori activities that I must mention is the research partnership with Māori health providers. In an effort to overcome oral health disparities, a number of Māori health organisations have established Māori health services to meet the dental health needs of their communities. As these clinical services have developed, a subsequent initiative to build the capacity and capability of their provider organisation was to engage in oral health research. To progress a research strategy, two Māori oral health providers chose to enter into respective research partnership with the University of Otago, and that was Raukura Hauora o Tainui and in Waikato and Te Manitoro in Tauranga. So with in University and the Raukura Hauora o Tainui developed a successful research collaboration over a number of years. So in 2005 we had a $5,000 HRC seeding grant and this was for us to get together. We had lots of who to decide, you know, what do we know, what don't we know, what do we need to know, why do we need to know it. From there, we had a $40,000 grant looking at the impact of oral health and the quality of life of rangatahi residing with the rohe of Waikato. And then the 2010, the HRC International Collaborative Indigenous Health Research Partnership. So what we did, we went from a $5,000 to a $40,000 to a $2.3 million grant with Tainui. And in December last year, the Honourable Tariana Turia, Associate for Minister of Health, wanted to see us in her office to personally relate to her the results of our findings up until then. With the International Collaborative Research Health Partnership project, which was about reducing disease burden and health inequalities arising from chronic disease amongst indigenous children. And so the international research partners are the University of Otago, the University of Adelaide in Australia, and the University of Toronto. And in New Zealand, the research partners here at the University of Otago, Raukura Hauora o Tainui, and the Tainui College for Research and Development. And that's our scheme of things of how it works. And I have to say that having Professor Murray Thompson and Dr. Kate Morgane as part of our team is that we wouldn't have got the grant without them. So it's great that to have them in there. And so that's an intervention study on the oral health of Māori mothers and their babies. And so pregnant Indigenous women residing in the three countries and their families and communities are all included. And it's the development of a culturally appropriate early childhood cures intervention that aims to improve child oral health in full partnership with Indigenous communities involved. And that sort of scheme of things in New Zealand, we recruited 200 mothers-to-be, and they're randomly assigned to an intervention group and a delayed intervention group, and then we have these easy interventions here. And so it involves, interventions involve four components. There's dental care provided to the mother during pregnancy, an application of topical fluoride to the teeth of children, and anticipatory guidance and motivational interfering on oral health. And so aimed at the project will provide much needed evidence for policymakers to address the challenge to improve oral health and related outcomes for Indigenous children. The other project is really has been great, and this was with the university and Te Manu Toro in Tauranga, and it was the oral health of Māori mental health patients. And with this project here, we had two teams, a Māori mental health team and a Māori dental health team. And so what we did is that our sample group were recruited by the mental health team. They had interviews, and then they went over to the dental health team, and they had a dental health interview. And then we gave the participants a complete oral health makeover, free. And then they were re-interviewed again afterwards. And it's the results, actually, we're just coming to a conclusion here, are quite interesting. But the difference between the before and afters has been quite incredible, because this is one group of within the population that really do not have access to an affordable and accessible dental service for them. And one of the candidates, participants said, after the dental treatment, she said, "My kids are happy to be with me. They walk with me instead of behind me." And what's been interesting about that is not just the individuals that have been happy, but it's their whānau. So families have been so pleased with the outcomes. I think, and this is the key thing here about this, with Kaupapa Māori Oral Health Research, the disparities in Māori Oral Health has been the driver for Māori tribal organisations to establish their own oral health services and to subsequently engage in research partnerships with the University of Otago, and long may that continue. And just to finish off, a little touches on some community service. One aspect that I was involved with in the 1990s with the Māori Health Commission, and myself and Dr. Edda Hannah-Ryan were appointed Māori Health Commissioners. And so with oral health, we developed an action plan in which we made a presentation to the Minister of Māori Affairs, the Honourable Te Hauhari, in the Beehive in November. And the plan was simple. It wasn't rocket science. It was just to have a dentist and a dental therapist working together as part of an existing Māori provider. And so he thought this was wonderful, took it to Treasury, went through Cabinet, and then we got it in the budget the following year. And it was in the budget. And this was the key thing here, that they said integrated dental care, a pilot program called Orangarihi will provide integrated dental services for children in emergency care to low-income adults from July 1999. And this contract was awarded to Te Tai Whenua or Head of Tonga and Hastings, which are my provider, and they had an oral health service with a dentist and dental therapist working together, and it was opened 2001. And it's been outrageously successful, the service, because the difference was it gave whānau a choice, because you could go down the mainstream side through the school dental service, dental benefits or adolescent oral health scheme, and then user pays on the mainstream side, but with the Māori Oral Health Service side, it was complimentary right down, catered for everyone from, because we had the dental therapist and the dentist working together side by side as a team. And what was interesting for me about that model was that the Minister of Health, who had herself been a dental school dental therapist, said, "My vision for the future is to have community-based dental services with strong language literacy scores, Mariel providers, primary care, seamless 0 to 18-year-old structure, which has the flexibility to extend to whānau and adults." And, of course, Mariel providers have been doing that for 5 years. And, of course, Mariel providers then had got very vocal and engaged with the Ministry of Health and government agencies, such that the speech from the throne, special attention will be paid to children. There will be significant investments in improving the dental services for children and young people over the next 3 years. And that was followed up by the Michael Cullen, again, putting $80 million into oral health services for children. And he said, you know, "The failure to invest in oral health in the 1990s has led to the deterioration of the state of children's teeth on record. This must and will be reversed." Okay, just another aspect of community service, which was great to be involved with, was the Otago Museum. And, of course, being on the Murray Advisory Committee of the museum and involved with the exhibition that went to the Shanghai Museum in November 2011. And so we did everything for that. We developed the framework for the exhibition, we selected everything, we did the background research, we oversaw the text for the panels, wrote essays for publications, everything. And this is one of my favourite programmes. This is Matapur and myself, and we chose the 320 items, Tonga, for that exhibition that went to Shanghai. And a big team of us went over there for the opening. And it was in their number one gallery, and it was very successful because something like 650,000 people went to the exhibition in 4 months there. And, of course, there was a lot of Pounamu there, and it was beautifully displayed by the in Shanghai there. And, of course, we were part of the Dunedin City delegation at the time, and our Rōpū also went to support the mayor on his some of his occasions. And so we had to do all sorts of different things. So the opening, there were two opening ceremonies. There was one according to tikanga Māori, and then we had one according to Chinese protocols. And we had to do press conferences, and we had to train up 200 Chinese guides for the exhibition as well, which was kind of interesting as well. And we had to give public lectures there for a while. So it was a great occasion, really, and such. And also writing two papers for their very elaborate catalogue, which was then translated into Mandarin. And so on the success of that, we're also developing another exhibition for the, which is going to open in Shanghai next year with the new Shanghai Museum of Natural History. Watch the space. Some other aspects of community service, of course, was the honouring the centenary of Te Rangihi Rō Sir Peter Buck. Initially, this was a Faculty of Medicine celebration, because he was the first Māori doctor to graduate from here. But when it was realised that he was the first Māori to graduate from the university, became much bigger. And, of course, during that, we were able to honour the late Dr. Paratini Ngata, who received an honorary doctorate on that occasion. The other thing we did was to have, in conjunction, partnership with the Otago Museum, a wonderful exhibition of Te Rangihi Rō, and we were able to have on loan many of his tonga, which are in the Bishop Museum in Honolulu. And then, of course, was the Faculty of Dentistry centenary again in 2007, which was a great occasion. There, under the leadership of our dean. And again, of course, we were able to honour the first Māori to graduate in dentistry, which was Mr. Walker Moriarty in 1928, and he became Principal Dental Officer of the Department of Health here in Dunedin, where he died. And another occasion was the centenary of the Otago University Medical Company, which had been was in 2009, and this was when I was in OUMC, and this is at Whangaparo in 1975. And part of the celebrations, of course, was that the university colours were paraded in a service at St Paul's Cathedral. And, of course, now we have our own ANZAC service, which was great. And the other great thing, of course, which is our Bui Potama, which is the Māori academic staff with our research symposium. We've had two of those, and the one last year was to honour the retirement of Professor Sir Mason Dury and Lady Arohia Dury. And this was a great occasion, and what was when I spoke to Mason about that and coming, I said, I knew he wouldn't say no because he'd be inviting all your flatmates as well. And so what was great, because we had Dr. Albert Kiwini, Dr. Bruce Gregory, and Dr. Professor Colin Mantell all together. Unfortunately, Dr. Tony Aruakere was ill and not able to attend. But we had all the senior Māori graduates from the university all together with the current staff in one roof, and that was a great occasion. And so when the next Hui Potama come along, you must go, because they're wonderful occasions, in fact. And another aspect, of course, was the development of Te Ao Marama, the New Zealand Māori Dental Association, which was established in the mid-1990s and soon became the recognised voice of Māori oral health of the country, and engages a lot with government agencies and ministers of health. And they have annual hui, a tau, and the one was just recently in the Tauranga, and a lot of our students were able to attend that. And just to finish off, a little bit of theatricalities. I had, many years ago, I'd been to see a play, New Zealand play, and it wasn't a Roger Hall play, I have to say. And I thought, that's terrible. I can do better than that. So I did. So, and then I thought, well, if I'm going to write a play, well, so what? Who's going to watch it and do anything? We'll produce it. So I enrolled in Roger's Playwriting 101. And from that, we had to write a couple of plays. And one of the plays was this one, Talking Am I, which he said you have to put on for his first New Zealand Writers' Week, which was having. So we did that. And I had and that was specifically written to be performed in front of Mātātua in the meeting house at Otago Museum. And I had a friend who was a teacher at Logan Park High School. So he brought two classes, so we had an audience for the first day. And then after that, it was packed out there. And then we had these subsequent ones. The other one, I wrote a couple of capping reviews, and the one there, Peter's pantomime, upset Steven Spielberg, because he owns the world rights for Peter Pan, so we had to change it to Peter's pantomime. And then with Michael James and I, which has just been on, and tuning you guys, and Takeru have just done a 21st anniversary production around the country. But people ask me, where did this come from? Well, it came from, it's not autobiographical, I didn't go to Vietnam, but I was always intrigued by that wonderful, iconic advertisement on television for BAS. Batteries, and that the Dear John ad. And they had these wonderful shots of these soldiers, battle-weary soldiers from the Korean War, and I always thought, I wonder what's going on in their heads. And so, and I thought, oh, I know what's going on, one of them. And so this is how this particular play has gone on, came to be. So that was that. I just want to finish off with a little quotation from my late father's undergraduate medical school thesis, because in those days, the undergraduate medical students had to write a thesis. And he wrote this with his friend Henry Bennett 70 years ago. It was some psychological aspects of the Māori. And the introduction to this thesis, I regard as a significant piece of writing on Māori health. But in so saying, you have to appreciate the language and the context and of the time 70 years ago. And this is what Father wrote in the introduction to their thesis. The Pākehā has been in this country 100 years. In that time he has been here, he has tried to impose upon a primitive race of people his European civilization. It has taken the Pākehā some hundreds of years to attain the standards of a so-called modern civilization. He has come to Māori land, imposed new customs, new conventions, and new methods of living upon a primitive race, and he has expected the Māori to be his equal. And this is what he says. Much has been done, much more remains to be done. The Māori of old no longer survives. In its place is a race of people who are still in a state of flux. Old beliefs persist, but new ones are displacing them. Old habits remain, but new ones are being adopted. The old religion is dead, but new cults are still appearing. The old education system has disappeared, but a new system is still being evolved. The old environment has changed, but the new one is still changing. The significance of this writing, I believe, is that it was just as relevant today as when it was written 70 years ago. Father's contention that much has been done, much more remains to be done, I believe, is even more important today. And so we are all on this journey together. And in closing, it's us. We now have three generations of Otago graduates. So kia ora koutou.
Chancellor, Professor Borton, he mihi kia koe. Ladies and gentlemen, he mihi nui kia koutou. It's my great pleasure to stand on behalf of the Dunedin School of Medicine, and my task is to sum up and thank Professor Borton. That might seem unnecessary after that moving acknowledgement from his community, but I want to acknowledge too from the Dunedin School of Medicine and the Faculty of Medicine that this thank you is about much more than a lecture. It is a thank you for the spirit and the willingness that has led to the profound changes that John has described and that he has led and nurtured and pushed. That patch of oil and Sir David Skegg's foresight may well have contributed. But above all, it was John that had to take up the challenge. And I thank him for that. And I thank him again 100 times for keeping doing that. For what it has meant to now a generation of doctors and all doctors, that is all doctors who've graduated through his teaching, for what it has meant to the university in terms of what has been established. His scholarship is obvious, and I salute it. You don't get to be a professor in this institution without it. His creativity across all his work is clear. What might not be so obvious is his courage. Sometimes, in doing his work, he faced great difficulty, including some of the attitudes he alluded to that might seem strange and out of place today. In the Listener last week, Sir Mark Solomon was quoted from a past speech talking about negative attitudes. And he said, "What we face is ignorance of who we are and what we are after. It's very evident, hearing John speak, that he has determinedly helped our ignorance. It wasn't easy. Getting to be a professor on its own isn't easy, but he faced more than most and broke ground. In medicine, we borrowed him from dentistry, and it's good to have seen him moving more and more to his professional roots in the last few years, reinforcing dental research, especially with Māori, and benefiting patients with his initiatives. Thanks to that ground that he broke and the seeds that he planted, medicine is slowly getting its act together. We have been very lucky to share Professor Broughton's journey so far, and I suspect it's far from over yet. I thank you, John, and your whānau and community for their support of you. We join you and those who are here to support you in celebrating this stunning achievement for which you and your community can feel justifiably proud. You spoke about Dr. Paratenenata receiving his honorary degree. I remember that day Pat saying that he was going to sleep that night in his gown. This might be a tad more uncomfortable, but it is a tangible reminder of your success. And thank you very much indeed, John.